altitude's undefeated.
Crap, rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge salmon,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and starting to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the evening of Thursday, November 30th, 2023. Earlier today, the Colorado Rapids had their introductory press conference with their new head coach, Chris Armas, and club president, Porrick Smith, was also there. Happy belated Thanksgiving to everybody. But here we are to talk about that, and then we've got a special Seeing Red perspective on Armas. Let me introduce my co-host, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Mark, how was your Pidsgiving?
We did good. I put on my kit that I got from Media Day in, like, I guess it was 2017, 2018, and cooked all day long. And honestly, for me, the food and the quality of the food is kind of secondary to the fact that my family leaves me alone in the kitchen from 8 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I am just in bliss. I did make the really pretty rose apple tart dessert that was in the New York Times cooking section because I was like, ooh, this is pretty, let's make it. And it was okay. I mean, it wasn't like amazing, but it looked pretty, and people on Instagram think I'm amazing. And of course, in the modern era of cooking, we don't really care about how the food tastes, but if it looks good on Instagram, you win all the points. How was yours, Matt?
We've engaged in hyper-reality there, Mark. It was good. I was back for almost a whole week back home. I have so much unused PTO, listeners, from just the crazy construction season and not taking vacation other than to climb mountains. The two times that I needed a 3-day weekend in order to make that happen, which were wonderful. But, Mark, I was back. The cats are both doing well. They have taken over my room. They think that my room is, or what was my room before they were born, is now their room. So I was an intruder for them. So Henry and Charlie were wonderful roommates in that regard. Grandparents are doing good, still kicking, both of them still in their 90s, and wonderful to interact with them. And it was a very, very good Thanksgiving, Mark, although I should say my mom is originally from Michigan, and we had a big Zoom call while my mom and I were cleaning the downstairs area and setting up the dining room table and then doing some of the mise en place for some of the last minute stuff. Turkey was in the oven before 9:30 Pacific time. And so we had the Zoom call with all of the Michigan relatives and everything. We had the Lions game on in the background, and it was a disaster, and the Lions lost. And my mom just turned to me and looked and said, Matthew, you remember that one time you chose to not have Thanksgiving with us, and then you went and watched the Rapids lose? This is how I feel every single year watching the Lions. But this time I had expectations. And I said, Mom, oh, you mean just like the 2021 Colorado Rapids?
Yeah.
Speaking of having expectations, Mark, so we're going to talk about this now. Mark, let's talk about the press conference first, then we'll briefly touch on the end-of-year roster decisions that the club dropped on Tuesday, and then we'll feature, Mark, do you want to tell our listeners the special dessert that we have for them tonight?
We have Mark Fishkin. It's a dessert of fish, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Fishkin is a MLS supporter original. He came up with a new term. We like to use the term... this is my only important, exciting thing. We like to use the term citizen soccer journalist. He uses the phrase supporter reporter for what he calls himself. So Mark's been following, the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars since they were created in 1996. He has opinions clearly because, Chris Armas was the head coach from, I think it was 2016 to 2018.
Well, he was there for between being an assistant under Jesse Marsh and then being the
head
coach.
And then he was the head coach from 18 to 20.
So six years totals that he was working at Red Bull.
Yeah. So I got to ask him a lot of questions about what we can expect from Chris Armas. And he had strong opinions. And I'm really excited, actually, for February and March to roll in to see how correct Mark will be. And I also am excited to see what roster decisions will be made over the next 3 months, because it'll kind of tell me, you know, how much, you know, the old Chris Armas model of a team is going to be rebuilt. But we'll leave it at that. You'll hear the interview in a minute. But Matt, first, let's get to your excitement, which is you got to go to a press conference today. I had to work, so I couldn't go to the Zoom call. But Matt, you got to have first dibs on sitting and speaking face to face with Chris Armas. What were your first impressions?
Well, I didn't get first dibs, Mark. I had first dib in the room where it happened. Brendan Plum was on Zoom. And so Brendan got the first question. And then I can't remember the guy's first name, but Siegel, he's one of the editors at MLS. So he got them. So, Mark, if there's two outlets that Burgundy Wave and Holding the High Line are going to be deferential to in a Rapids context, the Post and MLS is fine. But, you know, I think it was overall good, Mark. I was by the few things that I was not surprised by what Chris Armas was going to say. I was generally encouraged by them. I think he's certainly bringing a positive energy, and I think he's bringing an energy and mentality that certainly the club is going to need going forward. Something that, unfortunately, I think was a weakness for Robin. Robin was a steady, calm hand, but on some level, Robin was a stoic, slightly pessimistic, reserved black center back, and we need somebody who's going to have some pep in their step and everything. You know, we need some all right now. We need some, you know, some Ted Lasso. We're going to hit Man City with the chaos hammer, and that's something certainly that energy drink soccer is capable of having. So, but other than that, I would say in terms of like percentage of words said by Chris Armas or by Porrick Smith that I was surprised by or intrigued by, I'd say 75 to maybe 80% of it wasn't really there. Porrick didn't say a whole lot unless he was asked about something different from the call that I had with him, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago now, leading up to the announcement on Chris Armas. So he highlighted wanted a leader, wanted a guy who was going to be good with youth, and wanted a guy who was aligned with their vision from a tactical approach. And that's something to where they want to be really good in possession, but they also want to be really good in transition. Chris Armas finished out a really good answer to a question, or this might have been his opening statement, Mark, where he called out the supporters and said that he understood where they were coming from and the pain certainly they had. And he ended that answer by saying, "We will be an attacking team." And that's certainly encouraging from obviously the Pablo Ball era. And at the times, what I would say Frazier Ball turning into Rapid Ball, turning into not that different from Pablo Ball at times. But, you know, there was a lot that wasn't really said. You know, there was ambiguous stuff. Chris Armas coming in, being energetic. I think the thing that was most enlightening for me, Mark, the two, both of which ironically, or I asked a question about roster decisions, and then Mitch Carroll also followed up with a question about Rubio and about Price. And so he, Porrick had mentioned that they are close on some of the young guys, and that could be coming in the next couple of days. So I am not surprised that in all likelihood, Sebastian Anderson and Ollie LaRoz are going to be back with the team. I specifically asked him to explain the circumstances around Abe Rodriguez, who the club declined the option on him, but then he's not listed as one of the players they're negotiating with. And then I don't know if you've seen, Mark, I want to highlight this person. I want to give this person credit. So Mark, Mitch Carroll from DNVR asked the question about Price and Rubio departing the club. As I have previously reported, it seemed like it was a difficult but ultimately agreed upon mutual parting of ways between Price and the club. And maybe there was some, maybe there was something associated with the return to play protocol and the way that he was recovering from the Achilles tear, because he's not Aaron Rodgers and doesn't go on darkness retreats and everything, to where that was a mutual parting of the ways, albeit a difficult decision probably by both parties. And Porrick mostly backed that up, but Porrick alluded to Jack Price about to expect his second child and him wanting to go back to England to kind of set up the family for a post-playing career, which was likely going to be back in the Midlands anyways. And then he mentioned with Diego Rubio that they wanted to get younger at that position, and then maybe with what they were trying to do as a transition attacking team, that Rubio, while being a good attacking player, that's not necessarily where he best fits in. Jeff Brantley at Man in the Cage Pod on Twitter/X then tweets out, Mark, kind of summarizing that answer. And then you get comments from Diego Rubio. He did four of the smiling with the eyes tearing up emoji. And then Jack Price does the like hand in face SMH emoji as well. Diego Rubio has since, I don't know if he's made that tweet private. That's no longer viewable. I think Crisis is still public. DNVR Rapids got the screenshot of that mark, and I've retweeted that from HTHL and from Burgundy Wave. So I think it was ultimately mutual, but ultimately a difficult decision. And I think it was a very easy scenario that both sides in terms of Price, his representation, his family, vis-a-vis the club, agree to stay together. And I have to believe that Rubio, that wasn't necessarily him. That wasn't him snarking at Porik's description or maybe colorful interpretation of the truth, but maybe just Diego Rubio is a extremely petty human being, folks, and he takes things very, very personally, and that fuels him. And so him saying that, and so him probably interpreting that Porik said that, oh, he doesn't fit the system for a team that wants to be good on the ball and create chances, be an attacking team, but also be good in transition, that he could not help do that, given what the team clearly has been, both in possession and out of possession, without him as well. So
it's a great opportunity for him to get signed eventually by RSL, and then for Diego Rubio to score a brace or a hat trick to win the Rocky Mountain Cup next year on us. You know, like that's just absolute haterade fuel, baby.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mark. And I've there's a few other players that have certain feelings towards leadership at the club, Mark, who I think certainly are going to have a revenge tour energy against them in ways that Dombaji did, but in his own Dombaji way that was still healthy there. So that was the one thing that I think Porik said that really stood out to me that I didn't already know, infer, or haven't heard directly from him, Mark. And maybe the one interesting or the few interesting things I heard from Chris Armas. The first was a very long-winded answer to my first question that I opened that I think had a little venom. He laughed it off, which was a green flag for me, in that I think that means that that he's going to have a good energy, or he's going to be down to earth and open to criticism and open to dialogue with media and with fans in ways that Robin was certainly very dismissive and at times snarky towards when he disagreed with the premise of the question. But so I asked Mark about players being fans being underwhelmed with his appointment, and then that being based on them looking at his track record with his last four jobs. Not to belabor the point, folks, but obviously he inherits a stacked team from Jesse Marsh that was top of the table. They go on to win the Supporters' Shield. He fumbles the bag tactically in 2018. They lose to Atlanta in the Eastern Conference Finals. They regress over the next 18 months. He's fired 6 months with Toronto FC, one win, albeit in the COVID year when all the Canadian teams had to be based in the US. And then obviously the time at Manchester United, where there were rumblings that players were nicknamed him Ted Lasso, implying he was an American who was out of his depth and didn't deserve to be there. And then his time at Leeds, where ultimately they were relegated under Jesse Marsh, and then multiple simultaneous interims, like how Rome had two emperors simultaneously that one time. And so Chris Armas did a really good job of documenting each of those roles. I think areas or things that he learned along the way, or particularly learned in failure. I think clearly from his approach, he took accountability for the failings, regardless of the circumstances at Toronto FC, saying learning about dealing with pressure and expectations and difficult circumstances. And regardless of the adversity, like that's not an excuse. How do you respond to that is important, and do that from a leadership standpoint. So certainly he learned in failure there. I think he shook off a little bit the relegation from Leeds, albeit he wasn't there as long as Jesse Marsh or the interims were and everything. So I can take that. But clearly, I think he clearly laid out for me, Mark, ways in which he has been a better coach because of the four jobs that he has had most recently. And in particular, the lessons that he learned along the way that ultimately, in the face of failure, that now leads to him being a better head coach today than he was his first day as head coach in the summer of 2018 at Red Bull. And then certainly better than the head coach who was fired after a historic 7-1 loss, whatever that was, to DC United on 4th of July in 2021. So that stood out. But, you know, Mark, talk is cheap and it's really easy to show up and say, you know, oh, I'm super energized and, you know, ownership has given me so much support. Thank you for the opportunity. You've won a Stanley Cup. You've won a Larry O'Brien trophy. We're capable of winning. I've learned so much as a head coach and I'm excited to work with the players. The players are better than they have been. Now we just have to work really hard. Anthony Hudson, Mark, sounded really, really good in his opening press conference before we saw him actually do the work and fail to do so. And then the last thing, Mark, that really stood out for me when Armas was asked about players in particular, what he thought about the roster. He highlighted Navajo, Bassett, Ronan, and Bombito, liked Navajo's energy and hold up play and felt that he hasn't gotten enough service in order to create goals, said the usual things that we would say about Cole Bassett and Connor Ronan for me, and then described Moise Bombito as a really joyful player and one who's becoming a well-rounded center back. So if those are four players that are part of the plan, Mark, and Chris Armas thinks that those guys are great and I'm going to make them greater in 2024, I am here for that in the attack, in the midfield, at center back, Bombito and Max Schu in a back four. Let's go. But that was really about that was about it for me, Mark. Listeners, if you haven't, I would encourage you to go through and listen to the 47-minute press conference. I'll include a link in the show notes, but the clubs put it out on all of their socials and it was live streamed on their YouTube page. But there was a lot of fluff, Mark, and a lot of expected answers, regardless of how members of the media fairly portrayed certain things that then they took a more positive stance on. Oh, and there was a funny, I was texting with a Rapids fan earlier today, Rabbi, and one of the fans described the moment with Armas and Porik talking about finances and everything and being able to build a competitive team that was kind of funny, kind of cringe, where he says, you know, it's up to Porik to get the money in order for us to improve the roster. So if there was a meme to come out of the press conference today, it was that. But Armas showed up with good energy. I wasn't surprised by that. The fact that he clearly understands the job that he was getting into was positive. He ran into a member of the media, Keith Richards, from Nuts and Bolts Sport earlier before the press conference, mentioned him by name. So he's doing his homework to meet everybody and know what they are and everything. He spent 10 or 15 minutes talking to guys from C38 and the Locos as well. So he's learning to speak Coloradan, baby, and I think he's growing. He's trying to understand where people are coming from, and if nothing else, Mark, that's a net positive because Hudson didn't really try to, for me, didn't really try to understand and empathize with the circumstances and the reality. And so, if he can at least understand the problem statement and meet people emotionally where they are, that's something Hudson didn't try to do, and something that when things were difficult, Robin Fraser failed or refused to do.
Nice. Well said, Matt.
Anything else?
No, I was just going to say that I think your historical overview of coaching announcement press conferences is good context for the sense that, like, we're jaded and we no longer think these are all that exciting as they used to be. I mean, I remember being at the Hudson unveiling and thinking to myself, like, wow, this is a big deal. Like, you know, maybe I should be hyped for this. Maybe this is like a big, bold new direction for the club. And then I kind of settled in for that meeting. You were there, Matt. Like, we looked at around the room and I just thought to myself, like, wow, they got every sales rep in the team, every like Aramark employee to put on a Rapid shirt and make it look like they were all there for the big announcement and make it look like there was a massive media turnout for it. When the reality was, like, you know, there was a good media turnout, but it was kind of like astroturfing the event. They tried to like make it, you know, hype, even though it maybe didn't necessarily deserve it. But that being said, like, you know, talk is cheap. You know, it's at the end of the day, the new head coach needs to figure out a direction for the team with the general manager and the president that is going to produce results. And the upside of this is the Rapids have never had a bar set lower. You know, if they could finish 12th next year, be a massive improvement over this year. You know, 10th would be a big deal. We don't know what the MLS playoff structure will be next year, but assuming that they kept it the same way as they did this year, you know, 9th gets you into the playoffs. Like, we only have to be slightly less terrible than we were this year to make it. And Armas might be able to accomplish that as long as they get some decent replacements for Rubio and Price. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no. Don Garber is proud to announce, Mark, that in the new 2024 MLS Cup playoffs format, 28 teams will make the playoffs. So I should say, Mark, Port kind of stuck it in there, but he said that expectations are for them to make the playoffs. Again, that's not a lot of expectations. Like, you're asking to finish 9th out of 14 in a table. That should be a reasonable expectation.
Well, and one of the great conversations, one of the great points I had with Mark Fishkin was, you know, poor Mark. I mean, you know, I gave their team props for winning Supporter Shield, which is a trophy that I think the Rapids ought to win. I think it's the most important trophy, in my humble opinion. I value it higher than MLS Cup. I know we disagree on this, Matt. You know, his team has never won MLS Cup. And so, you know, like, a coach who can get you to the playoffs is not an alluring thing. It's not impressive for a normal football club. A normal football club does not want to finish top 9 out of 14. A normal football club wants to win the whole enchilada in a 2 to 3 year, you know, plan, in a 2 to 3 year span. They're not, you know, like, that, to quote Shania Twain, for those listeners who remember Shania Twain, "That don't impress me much," would be the reaction to, "So you want to make the playoffs? That don't impress me much." All right. That's all the country singing I'll do on this podcast ever again.
Okay, Gen Xer, calm down. So,
wow, I just got boomered. That was awesome.
Boomered by the millennial who is called okay boomer by the Gen Z engineers that he works with during the day job. What else is there from the press conference for me? There was one other thought that I had, Mark, or maybe it was I was going to say, so I was in the front row on the right, Mark. I was in what normally would have been Brendan Plone's seat, since he was not able to be there in person. And I was the only person. Babiak sat next to me. I was on the aisle seat, and there were three seats to my right. They were mostly unoccupied, except for when John Babiak was there to take some close-up photos. But, you know, I agree with you, Mark, that there are some that we've both been through three of these now. We've been through three of these as a podcast now, for including year one under Hudson. And so it wasn't obvious to me from anything that was said that a lot of stuff has changed at the ownership level. It's good to have a head coach who understands and acknowledges the supporters in ways that Robin didn't always do a good job of, or didn't speak to their pain in ways that Cole Bassett did, Keegan Rosenberry did, Jack Price, and to be honest. So the fact that Chris Armas is doing that from day one immediately to me is a green flag. But when you go back and listen to the press conference, folks, you'll see that Pat Rattigan brought the sauce on the two questions that he asked, and kind of questioned the Armas and Porik's view on ownership and that support and everything. And so it's not obvious to me that ownership is changing anything, Mark. And in that regard, it doesn't matter who the Rapids announced 2 weeks ago and who was standing at the podium next to Porik Smith today. You know, the limits, there are limits to what this club is able to achieve right now, and unless that changes, I don't think a whole lot is changing. Can Armas and the Rapids money ball and distressed assets in their way to being a perennial playoff team, of finishing in the top two-thirds of the Western Conference, you know, 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5 years? But I don't think Chris Armas gets them any closer to MLS Cup, because I think the initial prerequisites for that are something that just KSC isn't going to entertain. And in that regard, Mark, it almost doesn't matter. Like, I feel like we're going to be doing this pod right now in 3 to 4 years, when Armas isn't retained because things don't work out long enough, they decide that hitting the new coach button ends up changing things. And so in that regard, I'm indifferent to today, even though Chris Armas was nice to me when I asked him a structured, fair, but difficult question. Let's talk roster changes, Mark. So I already mentioned, we think Sebastian Anderson and Oliver Larraz are coming back. Mark, yes, no, we'd be in support of this?
I'm hashtag free Oliver Larraz at this point. I just don't think the club is ever going to use him. I see Oliver Larraz as a competent, long-term USL starting midfielder, like a really great pure number 8 for a very good USL championship team, and a guy who could learn at the USL championship level. I see him as kind of like, maybe I think his ceiling at this point is like Dylan Powers, which is like kind of a grinder MLS midfielder for 2 or 3 years who ultimately will kind of like move along or be a bench piece. And that's not what I want for him. I think I would just be really, I think Ollie, I want Ollie to play and I want to watch him play. And I just don't think that's going to happen with the Rapids. So I'm hashtag free Ollie LaRoz. With Sebastian Anderson, I'm a little more confused. As I posted on Twitter, he's X, sorry. We're going to get there eventually. He's only 21. His growth has been kind of like back and forth and a little confusing, but I think he's got a lot of potential to someday be a starting right back for a good MLS team, including the Colorado Rapids. I think he might be the heir apparent for Keegan Rosenberry. So non-tendering him and then trying to cut a new deal with him is a little confusing to me, unless you decided not to give him a extension or to give him to exercise his club option because you want to cut a longer deal with him. But usually when you don't exercise a player's club option, you're trying to re-sign him for cheaper. And I don't think you get much cheaper than Sebastian Anderson's current deal. So I'm a little confused about this deal. I'm not really sure what it means. I mean, it might have just been basically like, you know, we'll quote unquote negotiate with him, but we're ready to move on from him too. So we'll see. I don't know. What if that, Matt, made sense to you, or do you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question that I would have is, in whatever conversations Armas had with Ollie LaRoz, did he have views on, was Armas watching what they did for Rapids 2? Has he seen film on what Sebi did towards the end of the MLS season with the first team? And then in that, are both of these guys that he thinks absolutely will be in and around the first team? Because then I think then you warrant, let's renegotiate to get them salary compensate with the fact that they will be first team players. And let's also get them longer term deals so that we can control whatever future there is, as somehow we, you know, if we hit gold with them in the ways that they did with Sam Vines. So that's my thinking behind that. I would support them coming back if that's that. If both of them are, but if their representation are getting feedback that they're still having to fight for, like auditioning for being with the first team in preseason, then I could absolutely both of them saying like, let me get out of here. Let me go to a USL team that's going to start me day one of preseason. I want to touch on Abe Rodriguez, Mark, who said some stuff, but didn't say he spoke. He didn't say a whole lot with how he referenced Sebastian Anderson, Abe Rodriguez and them not wanting to do that and go in a different direction and everything. I think, unfortunately, Mark, I'm at the point where I'm no longer going to take the PR in front of cameras view on homegrowns from members of the front office or even members of the coaching staff on homegrowns. This is especially if Sebi and Ollie do not re-sign with the club, because all I heard out of the club for what, the almost decade, the 7 or 8 years, however long that that Abrod was there, was their belief in him. I never heard anything. I only heard glowing belief from Chris Sharpie on and off the record about Abe Rodriguez and the fact that, like, he does what he does with Rapids 2, and then he finally gets to start with the first team and everything, and then it's the, oh, not renewed, not going in, or, you know, and then not renegotiating and everything, unless this is something to where he specifically wants playing time, because I don't think that Abe Rod coming back and getting a third year in Next Pro is necessarily a productive use of his time. I think the next thing would be, let me find a team that's going to be competitive in the USL Championship and go on loan there. I don't think he was getting into the first team, even if William Yarbrough isn't retained with the club, or whatever happens with that third goalkeeper spot, Abe Rod being the second and Marco Ilicha being the starter. And so I have to wonder, Mark, is that decision ultimately the financial and competitive decision that confirms the doubts that you and I and others have had for the longest time, which is Abe Rodriguez is listed at 5'8". I'm 5'6". I'm stood next to him in regular dress shoes, in cleats regularly. He is not more than 5'9". I feel like if he was 5'10", they would have updated his listing as being 5'10". And is there just a doubt of what he can be based on his measurables of his height and his wingspan and everything? And this is the ultimate reflecting decision of that, despite all of the comments that I have heard previously about him going back to being in the academy and training with the first team in 2020, being that they believe that he can overcome that. So, Mark, can we officially, I will acknowledge I was very slow to this boat. I want to give credit to Joseph Samuelson, who said it from the start. Gustavo Villasia not retained. Mark, I think technically still Columbus Crew still have that purchase option. So potentially Columbus could activate the purchase option and then choose to pick up his option for 2024. I think we can officially call that a overpriced panic buy. And Jason Maxwell had a really good tweet just about like how many assets that were sunk into a center back who clearly is not regarded as highly as Mike Edwards or Daniel Chacon or certainly Moise Bombito. Good luck, Gus, but also you got two red cards in like 15 appearances. So, you know, what a waste of 800K and then possibly another 400K in paying to Cincy to then pay to his parent club from South America when he came over. If we're assuming Cincy Soccer Talks reporting about that transfer fee being amortized was correct. Other roster decisions, Mark, I don't think we need to talk on Luis Diaz. We've already discussed Diego Rubio. And Jack Price, certainly. Mark, William Yarbrough coming back off of injury. Want him back, don't care, think he's washed. Ilitch is the starter. What do you think?
That was, I mean, there were two decisions that I guess, three decisions if you count Sebastian Anderson, that threw me a little bit. The mention of, you know, talking to William Yarbrough. I mean, I think the only way in which that conversation took place is like they sat down with him and they were like, listen, you're going to be the backup. We're going to pay you backup money. If you're okay with that, you know, have your agent talk to our team and we'll move on. And if not, not. And I would guess his agent is now making phone calls around the country and saying, like, would you want this guy to be a starter? I would guess if I knew the kind of competitive fires of a player like, of players like this, and also the kind of pay grade that these guys are at, they'd take mid-market money and a starting position over a good salary to sit on the bench any day. Like, I'm guessing William Yarbrough, after something like a 10-year career in professional soccer, is not necessarily in it to try and squeeze the most money out of the position he can get. He's looking to, like, start. He wants to start for a team, and he probably informed his agent as such. And so that's the question right now, which is, are there amongst the, you know, 53 or 54 teams between the U.S. and Mexico, one that wants him to be the starting goalkeeper? And that's actually a good question. I mean, it really comes down to like what GM is looking at tape and saying like, yeah, this guy's still got some tread on his tire and can still get the job done. I mean, I feel like Orrick Smith and the coaching staff passed on Zach McMath and said, this guy's not a first tier starting goalkeeper in MLS, so we'll just move on. And then RSL signed him up, and RSL's in the playoffs, and Zach is doing a solid job. I mean, metric wise, you know, looking back, you know, combing the memory banks, I'm not looking at anything statistically online, but like Zach McMath was a league average goalkeeper in a league where that's not an insult, that's a compliment. That means you're the 14th best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer. I will take that. You know, there were years when Tim Howard was the 34th best goalkeeper in a league with only 28 starting goalkeepers because they were literally backups on other teams who were doing a better job than him in his final year. We would have taken Zach McMath, but we didn't. We decided to move on. We could do better. And William Yarbrough has been better. He's been great. Now we're betting that Marco Ilitch will do a better job also, and maybe he will. For me, I think it's fine to pass on William Yarbrough. The other player that I was surprised about, Matt, was Ralph Prizzo. The fact that they just exercised his option and said, hey, let's go. I was like, really? I mean, he has been for me kind of like dramatically underwhelming, and more importantly than underwhelming, lacking in demonstration of growth.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're going to say that Sebastian Anderson is a maybe, and we're not sure whether the guy is going to, like, has a high ceiling and is going to grow into the position, then I'm not sure how you make any different determination with Ralph Prizzo, except for the fact that we're just short of that position and midfielders are hard to come by. I don't know. I really don't. It was a bit of a puzzler for me.
I was looking at the numbers as well, Mark, and so Ralph Prizzo still has a little bit more length on his contract left, and so you're thinking, like, we can pick up a guy's option, pay him still five-figure salary, have him sit on the bench. Right. Like, that's a cheaper and less risky die to roll, if that makes any sense. So that that's was really smart. The only
that's
other a, thought I
that's
had.
That's good analysis, Matt.
But I at some point, I want to get a sit down with Chris Armas and almost like go, you know, he mentioned those four players because I think the four that stood out, but like given how much of a youth guy he is, given coming up from Red Bulls and everything, he's got some connections to the college game and everything. I want to get like individually like his thought, his plan for what those players look like. What does he think he can do with Ralph Priso that Robin Fraser wasn't able to do, given that Robin Fraser was at Toronto FC for so long that he remembers Ralph when Ralph hadn't even completed his growth spurt yet. And they specifically traded for him. One of the, you know, when they sent Mark Anthony Kay to Toronto FC, they got all the assets and everything. They listed, I think it was three or four young kids, academy kids that they wanted, and Priso was one of them that they were particularly interested in. There was another, his name escapes me right now. I don't remember what he's done with TFC. So specifically, this was a guy that they traded for because Robin Fraser knew him, understood him, and believed that he could produce something, and he hasn't in, you know, in a year and a half that he's been with Colorado. So that's one that I find the only reason it makes sense to me, Mark, is because he's still got a lot of length to go. He just turned 21 and he's not even going to cost you $100K. That is nothing in the new MLS salaries at this point right now. What are you going to do? Bring back Colin Warner for the league minimum? So, and then the only other name from a roster standpoint, Mark, that I wanted to talk about was, I wasn't surprised by this because I knew this on paper, but Max Alves, obviously guaranteed for 2024 and is listed as one of the seven midfielders along with Ralph Priso on that. And we still don't know what's going on, Mark. And it'll be, I think it was May.
Well, I think 10th. We know what's going on. And the answer is nothing. Nothing is going on. We know exactly what's going on.
So it was May 10th, Mark, that news broke. That was when I published, that's the day that I published the article at Burgundy Wave about that, compiling some of the stuff and some translated things from Portuguese to English. So we're going on 6 months now that this is going on. Meanwhile, Mark, we still don't know what Bruce Arena said and to whom, but MLS wrapped that up in like a month, 2 months. You know, FC Cincinnati fans might not be happy about the timing of the decision levied down on Matt Miazga, but they wrapped that up. This is a 6 month long going on investigation. If we're believing the Geo reporting on Max Alves's stories on Instagram, he was back in Brazil, and then some point late in the fall, this fall that just ended, he was back in Denver, and he's now been back in Brazil for a couple of weeks. Is that related to the investigation? Is that just because the season's coming to an end? And the fact that we don't have any clarity on this, Mark, and like at some point, if this goes into Mark, if we get to the season opener next year and we're in the same place in terms of knowledge and the investigation's ongoing and we don't hear anything from Brazil and we don't hear anything from MLS and FIFA's like, well, we're waiting for the legal stuff to hand out and we don't know what the outcome is for Max, to say nothing of the macro investigation that's going on there. Like, at some point, would it not make sense for the Rapids to go to MLS, go to the MLSPA and say like, this is dead money on us. We are paying a guy to sit around and not do this. Like, can we get a temporary exempt, like open U22 slot so that we can get somebody else? Can we get some grievance money?
Can you make up a rule just like you do for every other team in the league when they really need one? Like, can maybe MLS can create a new MLS rule? And the new MLS rule is every team in the league gets one made up rule that they get to break in their club's history that they could use. And ours will be, if you're one of your players commits a serious felony, you get some sort of salary relief. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Matt's not a fan, but
I'm a fan of this idea, Mark. The made up rule is you get to file a one-time switch of making your owner sell the team.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, like the MLS's propensity for ridiculous made up rules on occasion being like the time Jermaine Jones was assigned to an MLS team by a random draw of closed
envelopes. Yes. Oh my God.
We don't know how to deal with this, so we're just going to make up a rule. Fun. You know, we've never had a guy bet on Major League Soccer. Or it'd be involved in gambling and throwing a yellow card so that he could help the gamblers do things. Therefore, we will make up a rule. Yeah,
but you know, Mark, if Gustavo Villasia is a sunk cost because they paid, you know, supposedly $1.2 million in total money, and he took up a U-22 slot and I think an international roster spot as well. And then you sent him on loan for $175K in GAM, and then you finally just decided to cut bait and everything. Like, at what point, how long would this have to draw out? How close would we have to get to the end of Max's, I think it was a 5-year contract or a 4+1 that he signed, before you say, okay, the $1 million that we paid to acquire him, that we reportedly paid to acquire him, the amount of money we are paying, you know, to have our player relations officer to go through learning with him so that ultimately it could be easy for us, so that it was hard for us to help Max adjust to the United States, but that made it easy for us to then help Navajo adjust to the United States. And like, at what point does that become a sunk cost? If Viacia was a sunk cost with 15 appearances and 2 red cards and a bunch of wasted money and everything, at what point does Max taking up a roster spot, you paying him a U-22 slot, and all of that become not worth it financially? I should say, Mark, this does now open up. Viacia being declined means they now have an open U-22 slot. So I do not have a lot of confidence that if MLS adds a fourth DP, regardless of the conditions, that the Rapids will fill that. Or if they are going to do it, it's going to be making Lulz Abubakar a DP so they can save $100K in GAM and paying him down from the max budget charge. But an open U-22 slot, I have to believe there's somebody that Chris Zitterbart's been looking at that, you know, if could Chris Armas beg and plead and, you know, go cap in hand to Josh Kroenke's office and say, please, sir, can we have $400K in a transfer fee so that I can get a U-22 attacking player from South America? I feel I'm more confident that that happens than we get a resolution that absolves the Rapids of the Max situation or a fourth designated player.
I have one other roster note to make. There's not that much interesting that happened, to be honest. We've made more of this roster non-news than we could have. But what I really liked about the roster information was I was reminded that Abubakar Keita is a guy and he exists, because I had completely forgot about him. Completely and utterly forgot that we have this guy. Now, that being said, I think it would be great if Abubakar Keita showed up, absolutely beasted out in preseason and turned into like MLS Defender of the Year. That would make me so happy, because we need freaking miracles. The other thing I was going to say off of this roster is I suppressed it for the last 2 months because we haven't talked as much lately, Matt, but like, I had suppressed the fact that we have so little roster flexibility this offseason. We don't have that many. We have open positions, and we have big open positions. We have money to spend, but like, we have,
it's 24 guys on the roster.
That's insane. There's 24 guys. I mean, the Rapids will make moves between now and then. Some people will be traded. Some people will be sold. Some people.
Lewis isn't going to be back.
They
folks.
Will do things, right? They will be do things. But that being said, like, you know, we're not going into the offseason with 13 guys on the roster like we did a few years ago. Like, we're going in with 24. Like, they've got to make a lot of moves, and a lot of the guys who are currently on the roster are not easily movable, attractive options for other teams. You know, you got guys like Daniel Chacon, who is a great player and will be a great player, but right now he's hurt and he's a full year away. You've got guys like Alex Gersbach, who like did not start off very well for the Rapids and was hurt at the end of the season. Like, he's not a movable piece, and he's basically got to, like, you know, show up at training and just absolutely be fantastic and lock down the backup left back position. Otherwise, he was an utterly bad use of money. Like, and there are a lot more guys like that, but we could go on and on. We can talk about it in February, Matt.
Yeah, no, to your point, Mark, the roster news dump that we saw on Tuesday did not immediately signal that this is going to be a rebuild, where typically I would say a rebuild in MLS for a 30-man roster is 10 changes from 1 year to the next. Do you have less than 5, but we're talking 24 guys on the roster right now, Mark. Let's assume Sebastian Anderson and Ollie Larraz both get signed. That gets you to 26. And then keep in mind, 3 of those 30 spots have to be earmarked for goalkeepers. So those are the 2 goalkeepers that in theory are backing up Marco Ilicha. You're not like David De Gea is not coming in as that fourth DP, Mark, to completely solidify the goalkeeper position and not let any goals in 2024. So we like Sebi Anderson. We like Ollie Larraz. We think they could make the team better. But like the notion that like, okay, Gustavo Vallecilla has been declined. The Rapids are signing in a new center back who's going to be better than Maxu. There's not flexibility right now in terms of the number of roster slots open, and we're not convinced that the guys that they bring in are going to be significant upgrades. And in that regard, fundamentally, Chris Armas is going to have to take the, you know, the bowl of lemons, to use the Pochettino analogy, that Robin Fraser failed with in 2023 and turn into something that is digestible lemonade.
Right, which he has no track record of doing based on what you said about the transition from Jesse Marsh to Chris Armas. But hope springs eternal in this dark winter of this time of year. You know, give me a couple months of shivering in the cold and watching German football and Serie A, and then come February, I will come back and be optimistic about what these Colorado Rapids front office folk can do with this roster.
Okay.
I will be happy.
Yeah, Mark, so A-Rod just posted on social media on his Instagram a nice heartfelt message. I won't read it out here. You can go view it if you want, listeners. That does not signal to me a guy who wanted out, so I increasingly think that was a club decision, not necessarily a player decision. Mark, let me scroll through the Ask HTHLs that we might have had to see if there was anything that we haven't touched on. Oh, Mark, there was a posit about getting a number six, Dax McCarty in Nashville. Supposedly their talks have broken down. Yes or no, Mark, would you take Dax on the Rapids next year?
He's just, we're not a team that's looking to rebuild with 30-plus-year-old players. We're looking... What we need to do as a soccer team, so my answer is no. What we need to do as a soccer team is get guys who will get us to 2025. Like, we're not winning the league in 2024, so only start acquiring guys who look like in 2 years they can help this team. Dax is not that guy.
Okay. Eric Stinson asks, realistically, what kind of 2024 campaign can the Rapids expect? Mark, I'm going to say make the playoffs and then lose in whatever the first round they're playing in.
Yeah, I'd be happy with 10th. I mean, being in the mix in September would be exciting for me. So, like, my bar is real, real low, and I still think it's going to be hard to reach.
Okay. Jody asked about sixes. We already talked about that. Hammer asked.
Stay tuned in our interview with Mark Fishkin about sixes. He's got interesting things to say.
Not presser related, so could fit in elsewhere. What does MLS need to do to get fans to pay attention to the playoffs? I don't like the playoff structure. I think there's too many games, and I do think, Mark, the numbers and the bump that we saw from Messi indicates that MLS has fans of an individual team, but don't necessarily watch a whole lot of the rest of the league. I think they have that problem. And I think MLS's way to address that was more teams in the playoffs to get more fans to watch the playoffs because their team was in it. I don't really have a good answer for that. Don Garber gets paid a lot of money to make that happen. Eric Vobg Pod asks, what do you think of Rafael Navajo's role will be? I think it's going to be the starting number nine, and they're going to try and get him to score goals. Do you think Colorado will purchase? Mark, what would you need to see from Navajo before the end of June to write that $4.5 million check?
He's MVP. I mean, like, he's got it by June, right? You said June. So that's when that triggers. So he needs 8 goals, 4 assists, 10 goals, 1 assist, something like that. He's got to be...
That's a lot to ask for.
I know, but that's $4.5 million. So, yeah. I mean, you know, if Diego Rubio can score 16, then Navajo needs to score 8, you know, by June. So I don't think that's unreasonable.
Fair metric in comparison there. And then the last one we'll ask, I think everybody else we covered in some part, apologies for not giving you a shout out directly, but Scott Hammond. What's up, Scott? What is the single biggest need for this roster? 6'10" elite winger. Mark, I should say, Pork did allude there will be other changes, so guys that are on the roster right now won't necessarily be back. I'm looking at Danny Wilson and Jonathan Lewis in particular. But Mark, I think number six to fill the Jack Price void, and then I think some winger some winger contribution, but particularly natural wingers that stay wide, not Calvin Harris who cut inside, or what the way that Kevin Cabral is very direct at goal. We need a guy who's going to have chalk on his boots.
Yeah, I think it's a 7 or a 9, some kind of winger who can play with or off
a 7. A 7, yeah.
7 or a 9. So, because Navajo is the 9, but like if you're going to play it, if we were to play a 2-striker system, you know, I consider that 2 9s. I know that that's not exactly soccer orthodoxy, but I don't want to dictate what the team is going to come out in formation wise based on, you know, I think a good soccer team has 2 or 3 competent strikers. You know, you have Thierry Henry and BWP, and you could call 1 a 7 or a 9 or what, you know, like Messi is a very funny kind of player because he's kind of a 7 who's a 10 who's also a 9 when he wants to be. So something like that. But like a, you know, butt kicking number 6 is always something I would love. And I do think a double pivot at the 6 with Connor Ronan and a second person, a young version of Kyle Beckerman, a young version of Dax McCarty, a young version of Bastian Schweinsteiger, all of those would be amazing. But I just, you know, it's very easy for me in my ivory tower / my wood paneled basement to talk about former MLS MVP level caliber players who I think the Rapids should go out and get, as if that's like the easiest thing in the world. Like, identify a young, amazing future MVP player and get him when he's cheap and available. Like, easier said than done.
Rabbi, that is the Michael Azira Memorial Podcasting Basement. How dare you denigrate the wood panels of said basement, given the namesake that they carry. I think that'll do it for us, listeners. Mark, I don't want to... We've gone way longer than we were expecting to go.
We always do.
This is why you subscribe to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red, listeners. So I won't do our usual blabber and everything, Mark, but listeners, I'll try and get... I do want to try and get Armis for an exclusive before the end of the year. I've got some ideas for evergreen stuff, so stuff will be on the feed. There is a very good possibility that Mark and I will not be doing topical Rapids content between now and probably leading up to the Super Draft. Mark, last question that I got. Give me predictions. Who plays in MLS Cup? Who wins it?
I put money on Cincinnati, so I'm hoping for Cincinnati, if only to save any semblance of any of the leftover money I have in my betting account, which is basically all spent. I will have to work overtime in order to get the hat that I really want to get. So, and don't forget to stay tuned for Mark Fishkin, right here on the pod.
Yeah. I've got, give me LAFC beating Columbus Crew.
Nice.
In this one. I think no Matt Miazga is going to be a problem. Cincinnati's back line is going to be in hell on the weekend. But I think that'll do it for us here, folks. Stay tuned right now. Here is Rabbi Mark Goodman's conversation with Seeing Red and Metro Stars 96 OG Mark Fishkin right now.
Hey, folks from Holding the Highline world. This is your friend, Rabbi Mark. It is great to have with us on the pod a special guest. This is Mark Fishkin. Mark is going to, we'll take some time to talk to Mark about what his curriculum vitae is with the New York, New Jersey Metro Stars, aka the New York Red Bulls or Red Bull New York, depending on which corporate entity you listen to and which naming nomenclature rules you follow. We're doing a special interview with Mark. And for those who don't know, the reason is because the Colorado Rapids you probably already know this, but have signed Chris Armis to be our newest manager/coach. And Chris was the Red Bull assistant to Jesse Marsh for several years before he became the head coach from middle of 2018 to 2020. So with no further ado, Mark Fishkin, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I know that it was a very strange season in Colorado, and I know in a world of coaching candidates, Stan and his team have selected Chris Armis, which is definitely a choice.
Yeah.
And you know, Chris has had a really interesting professional ride. And he is one of the 20 men who have had the title of head coach of however pedantic you want to get about the name of the New York Red Bulls. But yeah, he presided over the team's third shield in six seasons in 2018, and then made a horrific tactical gaffe in game one of the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals, which truly doomed the Red Bulls, who during that season had set the all-time record for points in an MLS season with 71, which has since been broken. And he blew the tactics against Atlanta, wound up losing 3-0 in the first leg of what we now, I guess, look on quaintly in the rearview mirror as a two-legged aggregate goal playoff series, which, you know, doesn't exist anymore. And the fans never forgave him.
I was going to just go back a little bit, but you set me up to some degree. You said he was the 20th coach in the team's history?
No, he is one of 20 guys that have had the title as coach in the club's 28-year history. 20.
Okay.
Yes, wasn't the 20th. But one of a perhaps not so exclusive club.
He's like number 17 in the list.
Something like that, yeah.
Yes. And correct me if I'm wrong, you've been with the club as a supporter from the very beginning?
Yes, I'm an old school 96er. I'm an MLS original. Actually had brown hair, not that you can see when this team started. Single guy living on the Upper East Side of Manhattan and a big soccer fan. And now in the, I don't want to say a flash, because it certainly has not been, 28 years later, I've been recording the Seeing Red podcast about the team for 14 of those years. We're about to kick off in the spring. We'll have our 15th season of Seeing Red. So yes, I've been a supporter and then a reporter supporter since then. Yes.
Oh, I love reporter supporter. We call ourselves at our podcast citizen soccer journalists.
Tremendous.
But I love supporter reporter. We're going to add that to the lexicon.
Go for it.
Wow. You basically started following this team when they had a different name, when they clearly had a different stadium, right?
Yep.
And there also was no Twitter, and there was no, there was barely an internet. I mean, there was just sort of kind of an internet. I remember in college, getting my first email name, and there wasn't a whole lot to it.
Right.
And there was definitely no podcasting. How did you, in like 96, how did you find out there was a soccer team and why did you decide to support it?
Sure. So as a gentleman of a certain age, I actually attended New York Cosmos soccer camps, Pele soccer camps, when I was in summer day camp and became a fan of the Cosmos, who were at their zenith when I was a preteen. And then there was, you know, the interregnum between 1984 and 1996, where there was no D1 professional soccer league in the United States. I attended World Cup 94 at Giant Stadium and was following with great interest the notion that there would be a top flight professional league starting as soon as they could in 96, and was a was in right away to get season tickets.
I also went to the 94 World Cup in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. I saw Cameroon versus Sweden. Who did you see?
I was one, and you'll appreciate this, I was one of the four Jews in Giant Stadium for Saudi Arabia versus Morocco. and our seats, which it was the only game I could get, and our seats were, I think, four rows from the top of the stadium, and it must have been 105 degrees that day. I mean, it was the hottest, sweatiest, humid, most humid days I can ever remember. And in order to get to Giant Stadium from Manhattan without a car, you had to take a bus from the bowels of the Port Authority bus terminal, which is not a place you want to be daytime or nighttime. And our bus driver got lost.
Oh my God.
On the way to Giant Stadium. It's like a 15-minute ride. And I was basically like, dude, the stadium's right there. It's like it's right there. See it? Go there. And we were able to get in before kickoff. And
wow.
Yeah, that for sure.
That's wild. Yep. All right, forward to this. Well, we'll go back to the end of 2018. So just refresh, if you remember, and I apologize if I'm calling you out and asking you to remember things from many moons ago. Do you remember the kind of post Jesse Marsh, Chris Armas transition period of like why he got named? What you were expecting? Was there excitement? Was there trepidation? Did he feel up to the task? Did he feel anointed by Jesse Marsh?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you that it was really an open secret. It wasn't a secret at all. It was very much in the open that Jesse was leaving the New York to go to Europe, to Scotland, I believe, and get his UEFA A coaching license. Mm. And he was very upfront about it and basically said, look, I'm constantly looking to improve myself just as any player would. And this is what I have to do. And I famously remember a match at Philly early in the year in 2018 where he ran away. Like he had to get to the airport to get his flight to get to Scotland. And it was like kind of during the game. And people were like, what are you doing? you know, Jesse Marsh, who came in, followed Mike Petke, who was ignominiously let go by then GM Allie Curtis. And that, you know, set off this now famous town hall meeting where a fan, I will say, famously yelled, why'd you fire Mike Petke?
It wasn't you.
It was not me. No, okay. I have a little more tact than that. And so Jesse very quickly became a fan favorite because his teams would win. He won the Shield in 2015. They finished first in the East a number of times under Jesse. And then, you know, kind of at the mid-season break, Jesse had an opportunity, right, to jump to Salzburg, and he took it. And Chris, it had been known for a very long time that Chris was the number two guy. He was the player's coach, right? Mm-hmm. He was the inside guy that really translated a lot of what Jesse wanted into action for each of these players, breaking them down with them on an individual standpoint. Now, the thing about Chris, which you will find out if you don't know already, and perhaps Chris has improved, Jesse Marsh was a master communicator. Mm-hmm. You know, Princeton, you know, attended Princeton, played for Bob Bradley. These are all guys who are part of the Bob Bradley coaching tree. And was just such a clear, concise communicator that anybody would have had a drop off. Chris, at the time, talked in sentence fragments about what he wanted. He would constantly interrupt his own train of thought. Mm. And for someone that was covering the team then, for Team Red, and was around the team, it was a remarkable shift. Mm. It was difficult.
So Jesse was quite eloquent, and Chris was a little bit more kind of clunky,
a little less eloquent.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't want to say that he wasn't eloquent, and I don't want to say that he couldn't communicate, but it just wasn't the same. To I think Armas's detriment.
Yeah.
Now under Chris, the team's points per game actually got better in 2018. Mm. They went 12-3-3 in the regular season in 2018, and famously on decision day, I mean, they needed Atlanta had a chance to win the Shield, and they gacked it, which allowed the Red Bulls to win the 2018 Shield. And Chris's style was very different. Remember, this was the team, the 2018 team, still had, I believe, and I will look it up right now, still had Felipe, still, I think, was this a year removed from question? Hold on, I'm going to pull it up.
It's a pretty impressive team on paper. You know, Tim Parker and Aaron Long at the back.
Yeah.
Aurelien Collin, Kamar Lawrence running on the wing.
BWP and Danny Royer and Aaron Long and Will Tim Parker.
In his first really great season. Yeah.
Yeah. Kamar Lawrence and Tyler Adams. I mean, so, right, this was a year post Sasha, but I mean, that was Kaku's big year. He had 16 assists in all competitions. Bradley went 24-11 for New York. I mean, this was, and again, this was this back line, right? It was Mario, Parker, Long, and Kamar Lawrence were shut down. I mean, they, and of course, Robles in goal. I mean, this was a phenomenal, phenomenal team. Mm-hmm. But the thing that happened, the difference between Jesse and Chris that year is that after Chris took over, the team got a lot more defensive and they were winning a lot more matches. And I'm going to all-time results right now. They won. I mean, they were winning games. They famously beat City 4-0 that year. They scored. They beat City 4-0 twice, once in the league, once in the Open Cup. They advanced to the CCL semis, where they lost to Chivas in a very, very difficult two-legged match, two-legged tie, 1-0. But down the stretch, I mean, there were a lot of 1-0 victories. There were a couple of 2-0 victories. Like the high scoring notion nature of the Red Bulls kind of tightened up in the back, and they were and under Jesse, they were very, very content to win 1-0. And in fact, you know, down the last half of the season, they won 1-0 six or seven times. Mm. And Chris would, you know, Chris is a central defensive midfielder. He is who he is, and his teams, exhibited the type of matches that he wanted to play.
So tell me more about that. So one thing I'll say either for our listeners, and you can disagree with this or agree with this, sure. And then I'll ask you off of this, but like the Red Bull ideology, has historically been, a high press and something like a 4-2-2-2 that was kind of flexible, which would morph into like a 4-3-3 when it wanted to, or a 4-2-4 when it wanted to, which is a complicated thing to kind of figure out for a neutral observer like the two of us or like you, who is trying to figure out, well, how much of what I'm watching is the coach and how much of this is, you know, dictated from the central office in Germany and Austria. Another way of saying that in a simpler way is, you know, in the 2.5 years that you watched Chris Armas coach the team, what were some things that stood out to you as tendencies of what it was to be a Chris Armas team as a, how did he coach?
I think the challenges with how Chris went, and Chris's tenure with New York was twinned with a real push to get young, like really young, to the point where they were the youngest, least expensive team in the league. And so, you know, after 2019, where the team went 500, right, after finishing so incredibly well, Bradley was hurt for a lot of the year. Danny Royer kind of took the reins. Brian White had 9 goals until they flipped him out to Vancouver, which was a horrific, horrific move based on how well he's done. But, you know, you started to see the dismantling of this great MLS veteran team. And really, by the time you get to 2020, you know, it's Caden Clark is on the team. And Florian Velo, who came up from the two-team, Omar Fernandez, who's a, you know, who's a homegrown, Ben Mines, who's a homegrown. Mm-hmm. And just the idea of being attacking-minded, there was just no one to put the ball in the net. Mm. And Chris, again, felt very, I think, strong about wanting to win games 1-0. But it just became evident that they didn't really have the guy to get the one. Because, again, it was mid through 2020 that they traded Brian White to Vancouver. you know, and after that, Brian White actually, even though he only played in 19 games in all comps, he was the leading scorer with 6 goals. Now, obviously, 2020 was a bizarro year for a whole lot of reasons, right? And it was on September of that year, with the team kind of scraping around the playoff line, that he was finally set packing. So does that mean that Chris needs a modicum of talent to put his play and, you know, put his strategy into place? Perhaps. I mean,
did you sense that the 2019 team was better than they turned out? Did you think that they had the talent, or do you think, it sounds like you're also kind of saying like, oh, he picked some guys and the guys that he picked were younger. And that was a mistake on his choice.
He was not the sporting director. He was just the coach. So
who was the sporting director?
It was Dennis Hamlett. And then Kevin Thelwell, who came in from Wolves. And
that's interesting. So the Rapids have a lot of Wolves connections too. I did not know that there was a Wolves connection too.
Yep. And in fact, Thelwell stayed, I think, until the middle of 22. And then he went back to the UK. But I mean looking at the 2019 team, it was still Sean Davis and Danny Royer and Mark Shatkovsky and Aaron Long and Kaku, who that was his last year with the team
when he became a problem. Yeah,
he was a problem weeks after he got here. He did not he didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
I mean, he was literally talking to his agent about get me to Club America as soon as possible.
Wow.
But nevertheless, I mean, back to Chris, you know, the team just wasn't as strong. Kamar Lawrence, you know, was a little injured, was a little beat up. The goals just were harder to come by. As I said, without Brad, it was just a whole lot more difficult. And, you know, Chris, I think, like, the story, I don't want to say he lost the team, because to a man, even after Chris was let go, to a man, although, you know, I mean, getting a player to say the coach lost the team is a bit of a stretch, but, you know, Chris, the team was still aglow from finishing at the top of the league, winning the Shield in 2018, but it was such a big step back in terms of result. I mean, they went from the best team ever to being a 500 team.
But made the playoffs, and then made the playoffs again in 2020.
Yeah, but you have to understand, Mark, that this team makes the playoffs every year.
Yeah, and hasn't ever won MLS Cup.
Yes, thank you, Chris. Thank you. I didn't know that. It's been an educational. Thank you, Mark. That's really terrific.
No, I didn't mean. I didn't mean to stab you in the.
Red Bull Matt Kanji, who delivered the Rapids' only star on their crest, so,
and then immediately broke his leg.
And
an amazing 2010. It is just another story. I don't say it out of any one-upsmanship at all. We are in the bottom of the league right now. We're second to bottom from Toronto. Yeah. And, you know, it's been hard times for the Rapids. And I am a big Supporters Shield guy. I just really think, you know, winning Supporters Shield is real proof that you can do it. You know, especially considering I'm going to use Yiddish here, the Ungapachki way we do the playoffs every year in MLS, where this year it's a best of three and last year it's a home and away series. And, you know, one year we're going to do a neutral final location for MLS Cup, and another year we'll do it as a straight knockout with no play-in, and like the rules change. Anyways, point being, so what are you? So there's also, and maybe you haven't followed this, and I haven't followed it either. My friend Matt, my co-podcast guy, was really kind of educating me on this, of like Chris Armas being on the staff at Manchester United, and that having some sort of, there being, you know, an outcry in England of what is this American bloke, what is this Yankee doing on our staff? And, you know, maybe potentially him being out of his depth, or in the, you know, a fish out of water in the wrong place, something like that. Do you have any sense of like what the heck that is?
Well,
and whether that might have benefited him as a coach going forward?
Well, let's see. He wasn't there for terribly long, right? He was, you know, he was brought in with Ralf Rangnick, right? Who Chris and Ralph got to know each other very, very well during his time with New York. And Ragnick, of course, is big in, you know, a big guy in Red Bull Global Soccer. And so after Chris's horrific 2021 season with Toronto FC, he joined Ragnick's staff. And of course, was it Sir Alex that had asked him at one point? Oh, no, this is a true anecdote. Chris, tell me a little bit about where you've coached. And he's like, oh, I was in New York with the Red Bulls, then with Toronto FC. And he basically allegedly said something to the effect of, well, that's, you know, that's not good enough for here. Like, that's that's not going to cut it.
Did you see the Beckham series on Netflix?
I have not watched it yet. No.
The basic moment with Sir Alex Ferguson talking about Beckham going to LA Galaxy,
right,
was basically him saying, like, that's ridiculous. What a waste of time.
Yeah.
Right. Why are you doing that? I assume he still is incredibly dismissive of all soccer in this part of the world, which
I would think he'd be dismissive of most soccer anywhere that isn't, you know.
Yeah, he was kind of dismissive of Beckham going to Real Madrid, but right. That's, you know, so, but
why
yeah,
would you want to do that? Yeah, right.
But I mean, so, to some degree, you know, that's an interesting perspective on, like, how do you think that affects, you know, what Armas took with him, more experience while he was there, and whether he was able to accomplish anything? Like, was he hamstrung from the beginning?
I mean, you know, we all saw what happened with Jesse, right, when he took the reins at Leeds, right? And we all saw what happened.
Not last long.
Right. And we all saw what happened with Bob Bradley when he took the reins at Swansea, right? And it's like, you're being hired in to coach a bad team, and you have to be a miracle worker, and you have to be a miracle worker.
You have
instantly.
You have 8 to 12 weeks if
that's
you're
right.
lucky.
That's right. To
Which
turn
is
it
crazy.
Around. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make, it doesn't make sense. And yet, you know, the money is so big and it's so important. I mean, the idea of like an NFL coach being brought in for 8 to 12 weeks, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, hey, welcome. You're now coaching the Houston Texans, and we're gonna give you till week 9. And if you don't do well, you're out. And we'll bring somebody else in. Right. We don't really have that kind of structure here, for better or for worse. But nevertheless, I mean, he was there for 6 months at Man U. 6 months. And I mean, you know, they're still finding their way under Erik ten Hag, and it's a year and a half later. So it was a time of upheaval. I can't imagine it was fun. I'm sure he was getting a lot of abuse. It'd be a great question to ask him. Yeah. Like, You had this interesting European adventure, right? Because so then he was out for 6 months, and then he joined Jesse at Leeds, and then that was it. And he was gone, and Jesse was gone a month later. And so it's like,
to close the loop, just for our listeners who want the full picture, I've just pulled up the information on the 2021 season in Toronto. Because I had completely forgotten about it, that he was the head coach. Six wins, 10 draws, 18 losses, as they finished 13th in the Eastern Conference, one above FC Cincinnati, who took the wooden spoon that year, one above FC Cincinnati in the overall table as well. And he was fired on July 4th. So Armas has taken over at midseason. He's been fired and once and been fired at midseason twice, which is really interesting. I wonder, you know, with Colorado, I imagine he will get some time. We don't have a history of firing coaches. And I mean, Anthony Hudson got a lot of leash. Where there was no evidence that he was really doing very well. He got a year and a half. Pablo Mastroeni was an odd one because he got two bad years, then a good year, then 8 months of a bad year, and then they fired him. So it's always, and I think to your point about kind of like the step back experience, like when a coach inherits effectively the same team as the previous year with a few hinks here and there, and the team dramatically regresses, the assumption becomes it must be the coach.
It's got to be the coach.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesse finished, excuse me, Chris Armas finished with a record of 33-27-11 with New York. But consider that first year, he went 12-3-3 and won, and got them to the Shield.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, the question begs to be asked, like, I mean, he is a personable, pleasant guy who does interpersonal relationships incredibly well. And it makes you wonder, is he better off as an assistant,
right,
to really be that glue between the head man and the players?
I had one of the weirdest experiences I have is that I had a very warm relationship with Anthony Hudson. I found him to be a very nice, forthcoming, pleasant and kind generally guy, but not a very good manager. And to some degree, I mean, Rapids fans are still traumatized every time they would see him on the bench for the U.S. men's national team. And then when he was, you know, an interim coach for a little bit. But, you know, I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. He's good with players. You know, he kind of knows how to translate a coach's grand tactical vision to here's what you need to do in your quadrant. But
right.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that as a guy, you know, a commentator reporter, a supporter reporter.
Yeah.
What was it like to interact with him for 2 years on the beat? Like, what was he like in post game? What was he like at training to talk to
him? He was, again, and we kind of touched upon this at the beginning a little bit, coming from Jesse, who could very eloquently tell you the things he was proud of and the things he wasn't over the course of a match or a training session or a player or whatever. Chris did not speak in complete sentences.
Even later on,
he spoke in idea fragments and sentence fragments.
Yeah.
And in many ways, he could be brusque like Bob Bradley could. But Bob Bradley, right, who famously was like, well, you know, outside the club, you may be thinking this and this and this, but inside the team, we know this and this and this, right? And Bradley, while he had an exemplary record as a coach of the U.S. men's national team and obviously did very well at LAFC and did well, not so well in Toronto during this last run, I mean, you can't argue that he's not a Hall of Fame American soccer coach. He absolutely should be in the Coaching Hall of Fame.
Right.
And so when you get that, you know, it was just always pleasant. It was upbeat. But it wasn't always a coherent,
right,
that's not the right word, it wasn't a connected discussion or a conveyance of ideas. It was a conveyance of parts of ideas. You know, we held them well and the defense did great and we got a lot from our midfield and we need to do better. And it was just... It was difficult at times, but I don't have any doubt that he is incredibly well respected inside U.S. soccer circles. And I think it will be very interesting to see, you know, at what point does an American manager have an assistant on a Shield winner coaching at Man U and coaching in the English Premier League? It's a relatively short list, even if it only was for 6 months.
He's got a neat resume. That's a good observation. Do you think there's anything you would expect at the beginning of, like, okay, I would, if you were gonna, you know, take 100 free chips to Vegas on the first formation the Rapids would roll out, or the way they press, or the way they attack, or the way they sit back, or the line they play, or, you know, how many men they commit to the attack versus how deep they sit. What is there anything that you'd be like, here's what I'm going to bet you'll see in your first 6 weeks?
I mean, I think you will probably see a midfield triangle being the center of the action, right? And during his time with New York, where they were successful, they had Sasha up front, They had Dax in the back. They mm-hmm. had Tyler Adams in the back.
Mm-hmm.
They had Felipe in the back. They had Sean Davis in the back. They had Kaku at the top of the triangle. And I think, you know, I think the old school 4-2-3-1 that was so popular in the league for many, many years kind of has gone away. And maybe it's kind of going back now, depending on who you got up top and the quality that can be delivered. I think you're going to see the wingbacks really get into it and get up high and try and contribute. But the two sixes are going to be the major engine for snuffing out attacks. And
do you think he'll play two sixes?
Yeah, I do.
Mm, wow. No,
it's a back laden. It's a back heavy midfield triangle.
That's interesting because we don't really have two sixes. So we have one pure six, and that's about it right now. So we'll see what happens. We've got some rebuilding to do. So
well, as I said, while he was at New York, he had Dax in the back, and then Felipe and Sasha up front, and that worked for a time. And then it was Tyler Adams, and then, you know, when Davis came on, you know, shifting around a little bit. But as a defensive minded coach first, which I truly believe that he is, I think that's most likely what you'll see.
That sounds sort of good. It just gets away. So interesting, you know, Pablo Mastroeni was kind of famous for being a very defensive minded, you know, he's a defensive midfielder, very similar. Defensive-minded coach, and when he was fired, that was one of the quote-unquote the Rapids way, this famous op-ed that was written forever ago at this point about the next two managers that we were going to, you know, we were looking for more aggressive soccer. The other thing I was going to say just in response to the you might see a midfield triangle and they're going to play out of the midfield, you know, kind of like, I love that. I'm very excited because we haven't seen that in a very long time. The Rapids have been really interested in skipping the midfield, you know, like let's skip the lines, let's blast it up to the corners, or let's run it in through the wings and then cross it. And so let's not use our midfielders too much because they'll be expecting that or something like that. But the big diagonal was the thing that the Rapids were known for the last couple of years. But the reason for that might have been we didn't have anything else. We didn't have anything in the midfield, but that's a good question. I mean, Kellen Acosta was on our team. He was used as that kind of guy, that kind of Dax McCarty type player out of the back. And when he was doing well, we were doing well. And then he didn't get a contract extension. He got mad. We sold him he forced his way out to LAFC, and we haven't been good ever since. So that should be interesting. But, you know, we do have a very talented six that might be able to do it. I don't know how much you've watched the Western Conference at all, but the Rapids have this young Irish player, Connor Ronan, who came from Wolverhampton. And he has a lot of the hallmarks of being, you know, that kind of Tyler Adams, Dax McCarty type, tough in the tackle, can spread the ball around, pretty mobile kind of guy. So we'll see what else they can add.
Indeed.
Any final thoughts before I let you go? Let you out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as a journalist who covers another old school 96 team, one that I'm pretty confident doesn't get a whole lot of play in their market, I know how much of a sports town Denver is, and it would be great for the team to do well and for people to notice it and for people to come out and support it. You know, I can't say that Chris is going to come and play the most exciting brand of football that you guys are used to, but when it is effective, it provides results. So I hope that he is able to, you know, I'm not rooting against Chris. I'm rooting for Chris.
Right.
I think we all want him to be able to show his quality. And I hope that happens with you guys.
I roughly feel the same way. I mean, the fan base was not excited about this hire. I mean, I think that his previous records with previous teams hung over his neck like an albatross, and this was not the grand, exciting hire that they'd really hoped for. But that being said, like, you know, I think we're also, as a team and as a soccer community, asking for results on a shoestring budget. And that,
right.
you know, that's something that I think we're all a little bit, it's hard to tell whether this team can, if they had Sir Alex Ferguson himself, whether they could get fantastic results with what they've got. Mark, this has been a real pleasure. I really appreciate you coming on. And why don't you plug your podcast so that those of us in the Rapids world who are absolute soccer podcast junkies can hook on to what you're putting down.
Well, I'm sure that there's a very large percentage of Rapids fans that need to know the day in, day out happenings on the New York Red Bulls. And if you are one of them, then you should check out Seeing Red, the New York Soccer Roundup. You can find us on the former Twitter at Seeing Red NY, and you can find the podcast wherever you get your better pods. And Mark, it's great to talk to you. I wish you all the best for a better 2024, because it has to be better, right?
Awesome. Thank you.